Accession number 21554, Reel 6.
Sorry, continue.
Yeah, well, he, one of our chaps saw Pochi carrying a Bren gun, and thinking he was doing the right thing, he offered to take it off him. He said, "Not in your life, laddie." He said, "If we're going down, we're going down fighting." Because at that stage at Brigade Hill, between Fogey and Minari, that stage things didn't look so bad. And he said, "No, if we're going down, we're going down fighting." And he was quite prepared to use the Bren gun. That's from the Brigadier. So no wonder the blokes threw at the world of him.
Well, we can talk a little bit more about that as we come up to it.
Mm.
It was from this point, as I understand, that there was the situation of withdrawal.
Mm.
What had been the intensity of the Japanese attack to cause this?
Well, it was just that it didn't matter how often you cleaned them up, more of them came up behind. And they outgunned us all the time. Not only outmanned us, but they outgunned us because we had a Bren gun, that was the heaviest. They had a 0.5, like a Vickers gun, and had mortars, of course. I think that's one of the words I was nearly going to use before with the 53rd Battalion. They impressed natives over there to do a lot of their heavy work for them coming up there, which is something that our blokes would no more have thought of doing. That's why they were able to have such more heavier armament than what we had, but they just kept on. It didn't matter how often you clean them up, they just had that many more to come up behind you all the time. And at no stage was there ever a panic, and then you had to run or get out of the place in a hurry. It was a proper withdrawal. I know the book refers to it as a retreat from, the book refers to it as a retreat from Kokoda, but I was always maintained it wasn't a retreat, it was a withdrawal. There's a difference between turning your back and pulling out and just backing away from it with leaving someone to cover for you all the time. But all we could do, because of the lack of numbers that we had, was to go look for another defensive position, try and hold that for another day, because it was obvious that we weren't going to beat them or stop them there on our own.
How were they better equipped in regard to the average soldier's equipment?
Oh, only better equipped, I mean, from the heavier guns they had, like having we had the Bren gun was the heaviest, and we didn't have, I didn't ever see it. I think someone said we might have had a couple of 2-inch mortars, but they had mortars, a mountain gun, and a heavy machine gun, as well as our light machine guns.
As I understand, your camouflage wasn't that good.
Well, we didn't. We just had the ordinary uniform we'd come back from the Middle East with. And I know someone mentioned later on that they dyed them green, but we didn't. We didn't have time to at that stage. We just had our ordinary light-coloured giggle suits. Yeah.
What were some of the other tactics that were used by...
Of course, they used to, a lot of them used to climb trees, and that a lot of them cost them a lot of their lives. You know, you didn't know where you were being shot from. But it took them a long time, actually, to wake up. Took them a long time, I suppose you say, to wake up. We got above a Fogey when they decided that they would hold us at the front. Of course, because of the manpower, then they got round and circled us and cut us off from behind. But it's a wonder they hadn't had a go at that before. Because, things might have even been worse if they had done, if they'd tried it earlier, back at Templeton's Crossing or somewhere back that way.
You're mentioning earlier on that they would yell out. As I understand, they also used psychological or other forms of psychological warfare, calling out to the soldiers individually.
Oh, I've heard of that being said, but I've never experienced it, John. And I think if anyone called out, I mean, I know they say they call out, but the way that Australians talk is not the way you speak in English dictionary, is it? You know, and we're not, our name's not John or something like that. You might say, "That's you, Jack, you bastard," or something like that, but you wouldn't be calling out Johnny or there or something like that. It'd be pretty unusual. I have heard that said that they did use those tactics, but I've never actually heard of it personally.
So what were some of the tactics that you then employed to counter the Japanese?
Well, most of the time we're setting them ambushes. You know, your withdrawal might only be for a couple of hours. You might go for more, so they wouldn't have any idea when they were going to run up against you, and set up an ambush as they would come along the track. Because most of them, because of the conditions up there, the thickness of the jungle, mostly they tried to go along the track or close to it all the time. And of course, there was no trench. Well, there was no trench. We dug ourselves in above a fogey at Brigade Hill, but most of the time it was just open firing, you know, open warfare. Actually, the day that I got hit, now September, Potsy, our brigadier, who had experience of two world wars, said in two world wars, he had never experienced such a concentration of small arms fire. It's hard to believe when you consider the comparatively small numbers of us that were there at the time. But that was from a very experienced soldier. So it was pretty lucky that everyone didn't get hit.
So you were on this sort of fighting withdrawal back down the track.
Mm.
The average day of that withdrawal, you mentioned that you would retreat and then set up an ambush, but how were you able to sort of relax? How were you able to stop this constant sort of...
Well, only when darkness came a fair bit, because they weren't too keen on doing much in the dark. I can tell you, when you're talking about tactics, one experience, our particular platoon, or might have been the company, were guarding battalion headquarters, and the other Bren Gunner and myself were out in pairs, stationed round it in the jungle, and this, because it was dark, it was into the night time, and the chap that I was with said, I'm going to try and get 40 winks, Jim, are you right? I said, yeah, I didn't feel like going to sleep. And I thought he'd be asleep, because it was sometime later something fell near me. This was one of their tactics. Something fell near me, and I thought, you know, did something fall over a tree? And then something fell near me again. And I thought, no, this is one, you know, we'd heard of this tactics that they would throw things at you, thinking that if you panicked, you'd open fire. One bloke would throw something, the other bloke, they had a fair idea where you'd be. One bloke would throw something, the other one would be ready. And if you fired, of course, a flash of the gun in the dark, and they would fire at that. But on this occasion, I suppose there were three or four of these things fell, and I knew then that someone knew that we were there, but they weren't going to come closer until we'd given ourselves away. So I was back to back with this chap, and I remember reaching over to him and trying to shake him to wake up, and he wouldn't move. And I went and started down here. That's by the time I reached over down near his ankle somewhere, I'm going up his leg, and there was no movement at all. Well, that's funny. So I very quietly rolled over onto my left side, and I put my hand over his mouth, spoke to his ear, and I said, "Tubby, they're throwing things at me." He said, "Oh, thank God, that's you, Jim." He said, "I heard them." He said, "I thought it was one of the bastards crawling over the top of me, so I pretend I was dead." Now, that's as true as I sit here, John. So that's a tactics they used. But because you had been trained to do it, you didn't panic, and they went away. They never came. They didn't come in. So they knew that we were waiting for them just as much as they were won't never go at us, so they pulled out. But very seldom anything happened at night time. Even when they got behind us at a fogey, they got behind us during the night. We knew they were moving up the river because we saw the lights of them, but they were too far away for our machine guns to reach them. But very seldom was any movement at night.
There was a situation of no one really knowing what the situation on the track was, and people seeing what you call a fighting withdrawal as a retreat, particularly those in command in Australia. What does this sort of say about the way the whole campaign was being organised?
Well, I didn't think about it at the time. I mean, you thought about your own immediate area and your own immediate platoon or company, battalion perhaps, but didn't think that much about overall. Thought how bad things were because of the lack of firepower we had to come up against them with, but not overall, I can't say, John.
But in looking back...
Oh, in hindsight... Well, in hindsight, right from the word go, I mentioned it earlier, a bit like Singapore. They thought that they could only attack from the front of Singapore. And, of course, with New Guinea, they thought they could only attack from the port of Moresby. They should have, from that point of view, they should have given some thought to the fact that they could attack from Buna and Gona. And we came back here in March, April, May, June, July, August. It was 5 months before we went up there. Well, surely we could have had training straight away in northern Queensland and sent up there after a couple of months. without having to wait till it was almost too late to do anything about it.
As I understand also from some reading I've done, MacArthur saw the situation as proof that the Australian troops and generals weren't doing a good job in that area.
Well, I wasn't at Buna. Our blokes were at Gona, but the Yanks were at Buna. And from what I gather, if it hadn't been the Finnish, some Australians went there, they reckon the people that did the least good were the American servicemen in Buna, if he comes to pointing the bone at anyone.
I wanted you to tell us about the situation of your becoming a casualty, being injured. Can you tell us how that came about?
Well, on the morning of the 8th September, that's when we were informed that they had got in behind us, and between ourselves and Brigade, that was up on Brigade Hill, and Brigade was more towards Minari, which was the next village back. And that morning, our platoon, as a matter of fact, was sent down to try and find out just what strength was there. And my new corporal, and then was a chap, Barley Harris, and he got killed, and a couple others got wounded. And we reported back to company headquarters to tell them the strength and what it appeared to be. And then I think we were given something to eat. And just at that time, the Japs sent up a mortar barrage, which is probably the worst experience I've ever had. Because with a mortar barrage, you just can't do anything. You lie on the ground and with your tin hat over your head and put your hands over your head and hope that one doesn't land on you. And that went on for a while, and then we were sent down to try and break out through the Japs. Well, by this time, of course, we were trying to break out from through the Japs that were between us and Minari, and they were also coming up from us from Fogey Village. And while we were moving forward, I suddenly felt this tremendous blast in my back. I suppose the best I can describe is if you were kicked by a mule or something like that, because it's hard to credit the force that a projectile from a rifle at such comparatively short distance. And I went down, and it actually hit me just in the back top of the hip, and went straight right through, and it hit the bones that I sit on, came out through my groin. And I was looking at my medical record just recently, and it had in inches there, but it had the diameter of the hole in my groin was 3.5 inches, which is about nine centimetres, I think. That was the diameter of the hole. I didn't know. I knew I'd been hit in the back somewhere, but I was such a mess, as you can expect, from the front, with blood and gore, and I thought, oh, well, that's it, you know, I'm gone. And I thought, I remember saying to myself, oh, God, fancy dying in a bloody place like this, you know. I thought, I must have thought I had to die in hospital or something. And I went down naturally. Well, luckily, I fell forward, went head over heels a couple of times, I suppose, and I must have fallen in a small depression. And I just lay there for a moment, well, I don't know how long, a little while, and I thought to myself, well, no one's going to get you out of this because you don't see each other much. And I thought to myself, well, no one knows you've gone down because everyone's too busy doing their own thing. And I thought, you've got to get yourself out of here yourself. So I tried to stand up, but didn't realise my right leg was paralysed at this stage, and so I just fell down again. And luckily I did, because a machine gun burst hit the top of the rise just where I'd been trying to get up. And so if I stand up, I'm cut in half, so you've got to be lucky. So I thought, well, there's nothing I can do now, and I couldn't move because I was paralysed. And this is fate for you. Our OC, George Wright, is coming back in the wrong direction, saying, come on B Company, instead of going towards the breakthrough. He was coming the other way. He'd been creased. I can still see it now, creased along the here, and he was disoriented, and he was going the wrong way, waving his revolver. And they're saying, come on B, come on B Company. I yelled out to him. I said, George, because it was all Christian names. No, George. He said, what are you doing there? I said, I can't walk. Because apparently, when they'd opened up me with the machine gun the second time, they must have thought they'd fixed it properly and gone elsewhere, you know, moved on. Not to me, fortunately, gone sideways or something, because they didn't come to me. And when he came, of course, they'd have shot him if they had still been there. And he said, I said, do you think you'd get me a stretcher bearer? And he went. And anyway, a chap came along who was only a temporary stretcher bearer, and he took one look at me. He said, excuse my expression, John, but he said, oh, Jesus Christ, and he went away. And I thought, oh, well, I know I'm crook, but I didn't realise I was that bad. That's it, you know. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I've spoken to my own medical officer since, in as much as, although I was so badly wounded, I didn't feel any pain, not at all. When you cut your hand or kick your toe or something, it hurts. I wasn't in pain. And when I spoke to my local medical man, he said, that's what shock does for you. He said, the shock kills the pain, you don't feel it, not for some time afterwards. Anyway, I was still just laid there, there's nothing I could do, and along came our proper stretcher bearer. He was only a little, he was cross-eyed, that's why he was only a stretcher bearer. He was about 3 or 4 stone lighter than me, and he crawled under me. He should have got a VC, he crawled under me in this depression, crawled away. I must have blacked out at that stage, and the next thing I knew, I was on a stretcher.
Could you explain to me, I'm interested to know, in a battle situation, particularly in the jungle, how their organisation and coordination is maintained, particularly...
Well, it's pretty hard, isn't it, say, coordination. You are given a job to do and you go in open formation towards a point, and say, I couldn't see anyone when I went down. You couldn't see anyone 5 yards from you. So it's pretty hard to say just how your loot or your lieutenant or even your sergeant knows where you are, because you're just given a job to go forward, and as a private you're doing that. Of course, if one of those had gone down, you'd have taken over, admittedly, but it'd be pretty hard to say how they do keep the control, to be quite honest.
I presume that there is this preparation for an operation.
Well, you're going to tell what formation you're going, you know, and that's how we were moving forward, just in open formation.
When you can't see the enemy and you're in the jungle,
yeah, that's right, and you can't.
Yourselves.
No, you're almost waiting until someone fires at you. That's why, which I mentioned earlier, when they threw things at us to try and distract you or attract you, whichever way you like to put it, but you don't see them. You're trying to winkle them out, and then next thing, someone shoots one of your crowd from up a tree or something like that.
And you've got stretcher bearers in the rear, is that the idea?
Well, the stretcher bearers, they couldn't be in the rear when I got hit, because in the rear of us were the other Japs that were coming up the hill. They must have been over to the side of where they would have been, because I know I was on the extreme right of my platoon when it happened, so there would have been quite a bit over the left. But when this chap did crawl back with me, and I must have blacked out, because next time I was lying on a stretcher, and... one of the chaps, he was only a private, but a great soldier, a great leader, and he just said to me, he blasted away with a Tommy gun at the time, and then he turned around and said, don't worry, Jimmy. He said, we won't leave you here. I knew he might have had to leave me there, but if I had left me there, he'd have been dead with me, because he was the sort of bloke that what he meant was, we won't leave you on your own. But and then just after that, my elder brother, I heard his voice, and the Japs were so close to the time, I don't know why, I must have thrown a blanket over my head, thinking the Japs would probably overrun us and bayonet us or something, and that's probably why they threw a blanket over me, so I wouldn't see what was coming. And I heard my brother's voice say, I believe you've got the young bloke here, and somebody said, yes, he's under the blanket. And I suppose he thought, well, he must be dead, but he pulled a blanket over there and he said, oh, you're all right. I said, yeah, I'm okay, and I gave him a thumbs up or something like that. And then they started to move. Some of the other chaps moved the stretchers out, but we could not get back through the Japs who had cut us off. So they couldn't take us back on the track, and they had to take us down over the ravines into the jungle.
What sort of medical treatment were you given?
Nothing apart. I had nothing apart from a pad they put on you, field dressing. I had no other pain. In fact, for the first 28 out of the 31 days that I was on a stretcher, I never ever had any medication. Only field dressing, and that's all I had then, because I had no medication left. Well, there was a stretcher bearer there. There was no other. There wasn't a doctor there at that stage. He must have been somewhere else. But they took us down into the jungle, and that night because we were right off the track, we couldn't break out. A lot of troops broke through the track, but a lot couldn't, and because they hampered with the stretchers in, and they had to take us down off the track through the jungle. And I remember very well that night, one of the chaps was carrying me, had no food at all, and I still had my emergency rations, which were I gave him those to eat. I said, here, it was a chap who'd gone with me from the 48 to the 16 hours, here, we get these in here, because he was helping to carry me. And the hill was so steep that they put my stretcher and my feet up a tree so that I wouldn't fall down out of it. And of course, then we went on from there. Do you want me to carry on? We're on from there. Through the next day and the next day, and came up to Manari, and hoping we'd get back to Manari, but when we came up from one of the ravines, and they could see Minari had fallen. And then so they took us back down into the jungle again, and they headed for the next village, which was Nauru. And by the time we got to Nauru, that had fallen too. That's when the by this time we were being carried by the 2nd 27th, who had the most casualties on stretchers at that point, and who were the fittest, because they had only joined us 2 days before, and they had the job of carrying the stretchers. And when they couldn't get us back to track at Nauru, the CO of the 2nd 27th Battalion decided that they'd have to leave the stretchers behind, all the casualties behind, because their fit battalion was needed to try and stop the Japs. And I know it sounds, sounds terrible, but they couldn't be afforded to be just carrying stretchers. So they, if they had not left us and skirted around quicker without us and finished up joining the rest of the brigade that was left to try and stop the Japs at Imida and Ubaya. So when they decided they'd leave us, I don't know just how far they took us. They took us over the other side of the Nauru River, and I don't know, it might have been a mile, might have been a couple of miles, I wouldn't know. Distance doesn't mean anything in the jungle, and they left us there. Two chaps from the 2nd Queensland Battalion volunteered to stop with us, a corporal and a private, neither of whom had had medical experience. They were both signallers. One had a mate amongst the walking wounded, and that's why he volunteered probably, and they stayed with us pretty near a deserted native garden. And we didn't have any food left because they'd run out of food, and the only food we got from then on was when they could dig up yams that they found out in this deserted garden. And they used to boil them at night time, because no salt, boil them at night time so the smoke wouldn't show, to where, because we didn't know just how far we were from where, because we were behind the Jap lines at this stage. We were there until, I think it was about, until about the, I got back to hospital on the 8th of October, probably about the 5th of October, would probably about 28 days. A few of the chaps had died from there. One of the chaps who was shot through the throat had died. Another chap that was shot, he was from my own battalion, another chap who lived for 3 weeks, he was shot through the lungs, poor old Soaky. When we had no medication, the medical officer from the 2nd 27th said, well, there's nothing we can do for you. You'll have to let the blowflies do the job from now on, which was all you could do. And I had no trousers on, of course. I only had half a blanket wrapped me in. Yeah, I can still feel the bloody things crawling around in my groin, but you had to let them do it. And it probably saved our lives in the finish. But a few of the chaps died in that scene. Some of them weren't sort of mortally wounded, but they probably died of pain. One chap was shot in the knee, and I suppose he died of pain probably in the finish. I don't remember I don't know why, because it was such a big hole in my groin, and it amazed the medical officers afterwards how it didn't take the femoral artery out, because they reckoned that they could see the femoral artery pumping, and yet it was still there. It must have been stronger flesh. So we had no medication at all and very little food for the whole time out there.
What was the feeling of being told we're going to have to leave you here?
Didn't worry us particularly. I didn't think about it. I suppose I thought, I don't think you ever think, I suppose some people do say you think you're going to die, but I don't think I ever thought that we wouldn't eventually be found and taken back. I think you have a lot of confidence in someone. Someone's going to help you. And I don't think at that stage you're thinking that it was the good Lord that was going to look after you. I just think you think, oh, well, those folks have got the job of getting us out of here, and they will do it, In fact, when I was being interviewed by Four Corners, they said, did you ever think, Jim, when you went to sleep at night time, when you were lying out near that deserted village, that you might wake up in the morning and find that the two volunteers had decided, this is hopeless, we'll get out for ourselves? I said, well, you don't think of those sort of things. Not that they would have done. No one would do that to his mates. I said, but you didn't even think along those lines.
Well, what about the fact that you knew you were behind enemy lines and you might be captured by
the
enemy?
The walking wounded that were with us became a nuisance, because some of them, one in particular who was a dysentery case, bad dysentery case, and who shouldn't have been drinking a lot of water, he used to sneak off in the day, because these two chaps, I forget just how many of us there were, I think originally there were about 11 stretchers, and I don't know just how many walking wounded, And this chap I knew was going down the river, and I said to John Burns, the corporal who was looking after us, I said, so-and-so's gone down the river again, and he gave him a blast because they were afraid that they might go down there, and we didn't, they just, you know, with a, I have heard since that the Japs, part of their supply was that they had to look for native villages and build up their supplies from what they could get from the native villages. I suppose they thought perhaps at the time that this might have been the only village, and I think we were probably the only group that was never found, luckily. Well, I wouldn't have been here to tell a story otherwise. I would have been one of the ones that didn't come back. But what happened in the finish was that because things looked so bad, and because they were becoming a bit of their movement of the walking wound wasn't helping, this John Burns, the corporal, direction, north, south, what do you call it? Compass. Gave them the only one he had and told them to find, and they all got back in a, you know, circuitous way. They all got back, and you wouldn't have expected that to happen, but they did. And then we were just sort of left there on our own. I think at one stage there was a New Guinea native from somewhere came to us, and I got an idea that that one of the chaps looking after us gave him his rifle, because one rifle wasn't going to be any good, and gave it to him, but told me he wasn't to use it, and I think it wasn't long after they heard him firing at the pig or something. But I think it might have been possibly through him that we were eventually found, because the group, the patrol that did eventually find us, I believe was the third patrol that went out looking for us, and they said then that they had come across a native, said that there were some Australians under this native huts. Actually, we weren't under native huts for a start, we were just out in the open, but the toll on the chaps was you're getting hot in the day, and then the rain of a night time, we're getting saturated every day, and that's why he decided to move us under the huts. He was a bit loath to put us there in the first place, in case the Japs came to the huts, and they finished up into some of these huts for protection. And I can well remember when the patrol found us that day, these chaps come in, because I knew a couple of them personally, with their Tommy guns over their shoulder and a grin from ear to ear. And it was an unusual thing happened to me then. After we were cleaned up and put a fresh blanket under us, because we had just been lying on the ground, actually, on our blanket stretchers, as they picked me up and started to carry me, I just got racked in pain from head to foot. I remember thinking to myself, oh, God, Jim, you don't give in now, you know. Oh, God, you've lasted a month. Don't give in. And fortunately, there was a medical officer with me, and I couldn't speak, and I was just pointing to myself all over, and he knew what was wrong straight away, and he said, here, get this in here. He gave me a handful of salt. Because for the whole month that we'd been there, plus the fact that we'd even when we were as troops, you weren't getting much salt in there, and he gave me his handful of salt because we'd been perspiring so much, and the only yams we'd had were without salt, and he gave me that to lick, and I had cramped just all over, and that was one of the biggest frights I got.
I wanted to ask you, while you were lying there in the jungle sort of waiting to be relieved, whether there was this ever a thought that went through your mind, or, you know, what's the point of it all?
No, I can't say. One of the blokes, unfortunate chap who, I know this sounds terrible, I'll tell you, because it doesn't hurt people now. This chap that was shot through the lung, he wasn't alongside me, he was from our unit, but after a couple of days, this John Burns said, Jim, there's another 16th chap there, and he wants to be put alongside me, and we just talked and that sort of thing. But as the days went past, he lived for 3 weeks, as a matter of fact, shot through the lung, which is incredible, and because we've been told to let the blowers get us, that was all right, but unfortunately, he, because of his lung condition, he'd been sputum up and his face got blown. I used to try and keep him away, but you can only do so much, and that's another time when I thought I was going to die. I really did. I thought, in fact, I said to John, because I think he'd become in a coma, and I said to John, you'll have to shift me from the eye. I can now believe what people say. I felt my life was going to float away, and I think it was just the fact that I was getting so weak myself and seeing the terrible thing alongside me, but you couldn't do anything about it, and he eventually died. They gave him, the only medication he had was some morphine. They gave him the morphine, and he died, and they had to bury him. I think they buried four or five of them there, but that was one of the worst, that was one of the worst feelings I had. I really did think that I felt I was floating almost. But when he shipped me away, or he took this chap away, won't mention his name, mentioned him away before he died. Yeah, I've handled that pretty well today. I don't always handle that too well. I can assure you, I've gone to water a couple of times, John, and if that's on tape. And unfortunately, I've gone to water because when I think about it, it's warfare is terrible, isn't it?